You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I am your host, Megan Mandeville. Today we will be speaking with Ron Cook Barrett, Capital Region New York Gang Prevention Coordinator. Cook, as he is known to be, is of Albany. Has been involved with inner-city youth for over 18 years. He has worked as school security for the Albany City School District and also was a director for various recreational youth centers. He was hired by the City of Albany's Department of Youth and Family Services in 1999 and implemented the Gang Prevention Program, which was recognized by the National Gang Crime Research Center in Chicago, Illinois, as an exemplary program in 2001. He's now the Capital Region Gang Prevention Specialist, overseeing prevention and intervention programs in Albany County, Rensselaer County, and Schenectady County. Ron spends his days conducting awareness seminars, along with speaking to kids at various schools and youth facilities, and his nights reaching out to kids already involved in at-risk activity. He has been a catalyst in the implementation of a number of successful youth programs, including an after-school stipend program with the Albany Housing Authority, a teen night with the Albany YMCA. He's a lecturer for the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, the Middle Atlantic Great Lakes Organized Crime Law Enforcement Network, and the East Coast Gang Investigators Association, and has provided numerous seminars educating communities and law enforcement agencies throughout New York and New Jersey on identifying and preventing gangs and their effects on the community. He was presented with the 2001 FBI Director's Community Leadership Award given by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and received the New York State Governor's Dr. King Leadership Award for 2004. His program has involved over 600 youth since 1999, and Ron hopes that with continued community involvement and the ongoing relationship he has with the Capital Region's youth at risk, the program will provide the answers the kids need to overcome the negative pressures they encounter. Today, he will talk with the Corrections Connection about youth gang involvement. Welcome to today's live talk, Ron Cook Barrett.
Good afternoon.
Well, Ron, just to start out, what trends are you noticing with youth gangs in the Albany area?
Well, as far as trends, I mean, we're seeing a national trend as far as the super gangs, you know, the national gangs, the, you know, the Bloods, the Crips, MS-13, et cetera, all the gangs that are basically worldwide. Usually in neighborhoods, in our neighborhood, you'd see localized gangs, kids who are basically in their neighborhoods or communities more territorial. Now we're seeing an influence of a lot of the national gangs, and seeing that is a little disheartening because, you know, you sort of relate them to the West Coast, and now you're seeing it here on the East Coast in Albany, New York. So it's something that's, you know, it's becoming more of a trend to see kids who are claiming folk, nation, people, nation, blood, crib, stuff like that, which is more of the bigger scene in gangs. Now, on the other end of that scale, you have trends where kids are changing identifiers. I mean, that's a whole different slate. You have kids that are wearing oversized white T-shirts. You're seeing colors that used to be used as identifiers for gangs go underground. You know, there's an old saying, real gangsters move in silence. So a lot of these kids know that. A lot of these kids aren't wearing colors no more. You're seeing them just dressed the same, oversized white tees, blue jeans, and the only thing that differentiates is maybe a blue teardrop and a tattoo, or you might tell you something, maybe like a beads around the neck. So you're seeing a lot of kids go more underground with their trends. So it's a lot harder to pick out a gang member than it used to be maybe 10, 15 years ago.
But how often do the trends change?
To be honest with you, like the weather. I mean, once they know that law enforcement is hip to what they're doing, the rival gangs are hip to what they're doing, I mean, it's an ever-changing culture. This culture is so deep right now that they communicate and coordinate every day, and if they feel that somebody's onto them, I mean, the next thing to do is to change the culture, change the signs, change the symbols. So as far as trends changing, it's I'd say monthly, maybe even weekly sometimes. If they hear about things, it might happen in prison. If it creeps out of the prison facility onto the streets and they know that's a trend that's going to go on, then before you know it, it's right on the street just like it was behind bars. So you're seeing all the stuff change like the weather out here.
And do you think the kids are getting involved in gangs at a younger age now?
Well, the media's not helping, and to be honest with you, you know, it's the glamour life. A lot of these young kids who didn't really know about gangs now can turn on TV, watch their favorite video. They can get DVDs from the mall. They can buy magazines off the rack. So right now we have a media, you know, really glamorizing the lifestyle of being thugged. Like I try to tell parents, you know, when we do trainings, you know, trying to find yourself, trying to be cool and fitting in the year 2004 involves this so-called image of thug. Hip-hop's a big culture. So we have young kids that they'll see their favorite rapper. He may dress in that thug lifestyle, so the kid's obviously going to mimic it like we all did. So what we're seeing now is it's a lot easier for kids to see the reality of what it's like, and they can walk it and talk it a little better than they used to, because now you can see right on TV the media influence is very, very, very big. And as far as family involvement, you know, there's a lot of, you know, big things with family involvement, because what you have with families are, if you have latchkey kids, you have single moms, single dads. So it's really not the nucleus family we had when we had the Brady Bunch scenario of people sitting around a table and having dinner and how was your day today. So these younger kids are latchkey kids. They're out there on their own. They're trying to fiend for themselves. So it's a combination of things, but definitely getting younger. And the media influence is the major reason, I would say, why they're getting younger.
And how young are we talking?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, I've ran across kids 8 years old that could stack gang symbols that, you know, somebody should know at 8 years old, that knew what, certain terminology with gang terminology that they were basically mimicking. So, I mean, I've seen kids go to elementary level school with beads around their neck, you know, that were gang-related beads given to them by a parent who said, well, you know, you're ready to go to school, and these kids would just go to school dressed, thinking that that was the norm. So we're seeing as young as 8 years old, elementary level is very much influenced by this culture.
So you're starting to intervene at an earlier age with these kids?
Well, we created our program, our gang prevention program, to target 8 to 15-year-old kids, because that's the target area. That's the number one recruiting ground for these kids, is elementary and middle school kids, because a lot of them get slapped on the wrist with probation. They don't have to do the time. And so they're basically being used at young ages. So we're trying to get these kids at 8 years old, de-glamorize this life a little bit. They watch the videos, they watch the shows, they see the movies, and it looks so cool. So we're trying to show these young kids, listen, let's separate fantasy and reality. Let's show you the down part of this life. Also, let's give you some structure and some options, because if you don't bend the tree when it's young, you know, the tree's hard to bend when it gets older. And when we get to these young trees, we can try to bend them a little bit and show them there's alternatives to gang life, and a lot of these kids are finally realizing, you know what? There is an alternative. I really don't have to do this. I didn't think there was an option, but there are options available. So if we get them young and they're looking for making choices and a peer pressure hits them, then they can make the positive choice if we get them at that young age.
So what are some of the strategies that you're using to help these kids break free from gang life or to prevent them from entering gang life?
Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, it's involving the community, obviously. We had to involve our YMCAs, our Boys and Girls Clubs. We had to involve our community. I mean, our whole community has to give these kids resources. As far as strategies, my thing is, like I said earlier, bend them while they're young, provide them with some alternatives and some structured programs, expose them outside the box. A lot of kids in inner city neighborhoods, a lot of kids in neighborhoods, all they really know is the mall, the school, and the neighborhood. The mall, the school, and the neighborhood. We really have to show them that there's more outside of their area, so we take field trips. We show them positives and negatives. We have a program called Choices, where we'll grab children that are at risk, and we'll take them to facilities. And when I'm talking facilities, correctional facilities. The New York State Department of Corrections has a beautiful program, that YAP program, Youth Assistance. So what we'll do is we'll expose kids to prison life. Let them talk to inmates. Let them see the reality of prison life, because it's not like the movie they see on TV. They might see Oz and think, you know, prison is glamorized, or see a video and rappers talking about holding prisons down and getting fed like steak and lobster. So we got to show these kids, here's the reality of one end of the result. Now, the other choice is the same kids that we take to prisons, we also show them Division I colleges. We'll go to Syracuse University, NYU. We'll go any facility, you know, that will want to show these kids higher education. So expose them outside the box with these kids, showing them that, you know what, you can break away from this lifestyle just by, you know, finding yourself something you may want to do in life, finding out maybe I want to go to the school, find out there's a carrot dangling somewhere. So a lot of these kids, structure, be it Pop Warner football, Little League baseball. If they like to rap, we'll give them a rap studio. We have a team night that we do at our local YMCA, which involves 200-plus kids on Saturday evenings for free. And that was non-existent before. Before, the kids would get out Saturday night, and what were they doing? They're on the streets. Now on Saturday night, there's a structured program that not only the kid knows is going to be positive, but now you got the parent saying, where are you going to be until midnight? Well, Mom, I'm going to be at the YMCA. We have structured programs like hair and nail clubs for the girls, double Dutch teams, boxing, basketball, guest speakers, cooking classes. So we take these kids and we show them, you know what, your teens that are looking out for your future, the program's called TLO for Teens Looking Out, and the kids are gravitating now from areas where we didn't think they would come to our program, but they're starving for the structure. So we found out, you know what, they're starving for. They really wanted, if we create and ask them what they want to do, don't tell the kids what we're going to do. Say, what type of programs would you like? And when the girls and the boys say, well, listen, we really like doing this, that, or the other, as adults, it's up to us to step up to the plate and provide it for them. So we're really going to get these kids young, show them the structure, and expose them outside the box.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Ron Cook Barrett, Capital Region New York Gang Prevention Coordinator, about youth gangs. Now, Ron, getting back to helping kids break free from gangs, you just mentioned some strategies that you use. What percentage of these juveniles do you think you're getting through to?
Well, I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, my program, as of 2004, we involved over 500, 600 youth. Not all gang involved. They're basically youth at risk, kids that, when school bell rings, you know, they have a choice to make. Is there structure available for them, or do they just go back and go to the norm, go back to the hood, as they would say, and get involved with what's going on in the streets? So what we're trying to say is it's hard to put a number on it. As far as gang kids I've dealt with, I have 173 kids that over the last 5 years have dropped their beads, as they call it, or dropped their flags, which means basically put their colors down, decided to change their lifestyle, get involved with some little structure, maybe a GED, a job, whatever, to keep them focused. And stat-wise, it's hard because some people argue, well, how do you know if he's actually a gang member? You know, is he just a wannabe kid, or is he somebody that was a full-fledged gang member? So there's criteria that you have to use to basically see if somebody is fully gang involved, and then if you get that criteria down, you can work with percentages of how many of those people left. So it's hard to put a number on it, but to be honest with you, we've seen our programs double as far as us opening up a program and kids knowing about that, where before maybe 20 kids would say, well, let's go check out the program. Now we have 50, 70, 100 kids coming to these programs. And to me, that's showing that these kids are looking for the alternatives. They're trying to find something different than the streets, and by providing them options, that they're doing it. So stats is hard to say. Everyone always calls in their yard looking for, you know, percentages of juveniles, you know. But I would say this. Through awareness programs, we're getting through to a lot because we're targeting schools every day. We're targeting agencies that deal with youth every day. We're targeting everybody out here that deals with youth. So they're aware of programs that are there for them. They're aware of alternatives. So they're getting the message. Now it's up to them to say, well, is this quote-unquote cool enough for me to attend? Or am I selling out if I show up for this because my friends on the street are going to think that I'm a wimp or whatever they want to use? So we show these kids, you know what, we're going to make it acceptable for you. We're going to have fun with this, and you're going to find out that spending time here is going to change your life in a lot of different ways. So we're seeing kids now that are saying all of a sudden, yes, we know there's something available, where before, and even today, there's a lot of communities that don't offer youth anything. So when the bell rings from school, or even if they're chewing from school, what's available for these kids? So how do you expect to get the kids from gangs when you're really not reaching the masses? So by doing what we're doing with the gang prevention program, we're reaching the masses, and I think by reaching the masses, our percentages will only get better.
And what kind of support do you provide to them to ensure that they don't fall back into this lifestyle?
Well, what we do is we have some aftercare that we do with these kids is we surround them with a fist. I mean, our fist basically is what we call is a group of people, and what our fist consists of is a family member. It could be a cousin, could be an uncle, could be a father, could be a mother, a sister, a brother. Then we look to the community. Then we get somebody in the community. We try to involve our religious groups, our organizations. We involve our coaches. We involve just friends. If a child needs somebody, like right now I'm speaking to you on the phone, my pager's been vibrating. I can't call these kids right now. So they know that there's somebody on a support team that we created for these kids. You know, call this person, call that person, get a hold of this person, so they know they can fall back on somebody because obviously there's a problem. Obviously they need some type of support. So we're giving them that little fist, as we call it. There's always going to be somebody around you. We're going to squeeze it, and we're going to be there. So if the first person isn't there, go to the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. But we're surrounding kids finally with people that care. And it doesn't have to be somebody who's 24 hours, you know, obviously at their beckoning. It's just somebody who can be there. So if in school, for instance, a child's having a problem, he's going to lash out and do something negative. We try to involve maybe a guidance counselor, an alternative teacher, somebody who's going to be in the building that if before they blow their steam, before they do something that might jeopardize their career, how about this? Go on down to so-and-so's office. You know they're always going to be there for you, and maybe you can let the steam out that way. So providing these kids with somebody as far as aftercare and support programs and coming home and saying, listen, instead of you just hanging out every day, we have a job for you now. So when you're done with school, you're working from 4 to 8. When 8 o'clock comes, you're going to be so tired and hungry, you're just going to want to go home, relax, fill your belly, watch some television, wake up, and the same day you're going to be structured. So we're trying to occupy the time with just more programs. So we're creating programs every day that say you're in placement. You might be at Berkshire Farm, try on one of the OCFS facilities. When you come home, we're going to take you and say, listen, you're not just going to go back to the neighborhood, get involved in the same jungle that captured you in there. We're going to provide you with alternatives so you can't say, well, I'm bored, there's nothing there. So the programs and just giving them the structure and giving them aftercare and just making sure that they're always going to be busy occupying their time is probably the best way to keep them away from the negative environment.
So the kids that are involved in the juvenile justice system, what can juvenile corrections agencies do to help this effort?
I mean, it's funny because to me, I think they should be more proactive with up-to-date trainings, you know, because we spoke earlier, this changes like the weather. So a lot of facilities, when you approach them about doing some identification trainings or what their big gangs are and some of the trends, you know, most of the time you hear, well, we had a training 2 years ago, or we did that again, or we did that before. This is something that you have to stay on top of. As an agency director, I see kids coming in. A lot of times, like I said, real gangsters are moving in silence. They don't have to wear colors. It could be subtle things they're doing with correctional clothes. I see kids at facilities now that'll just take their belt and pull to the right or pull their belt to the left. Drag leather to the right, drag leather to the left, because that symbolizes what nation they belong to, folk nation, people nation. So, and a lot of staff members aren't really hip to this. A lot of our educators in these facilities with juveniles They're doing work, paperwork, and what they're doing is they're crossing out C's and crossing out B's because they disrespect Bloods or Crips, handing these papers into our educators who have no idea why these kids are doing that. So to me, is if you're up to date on trainings, you can sort of create a zero tolerance on identifiers, a zero tolerance on activity that might happen in your facility. Some of these kids, they go into the facilities, and 6 months later, when they're spit back out to the streets, they can walk it and talk it better than they could when they got there. And to me, that's terrible. These kids are learning, they're passing manifestos, and they're passing knowledge of gangs so they can walk it and talk it better to each other while they're incarcerated, where our facilities and agencies could see these things, be proactive and intercept these things, and say, listen, in our facility, we're not having this. So I just think more proactive. Be up to date on the trainings. Create a zero tolerance so when these children and these adults get into your facilities, you can tell them, I'm sorry, we're up on the latest signs and the graffiti. We're up on the latest things you're doing with beads and stacking with hand signs. And if you can educate people and they can be up on all these things, then to be honest with you, you're on the right way within the facility to keep a lid on the boiling pot, as I say. But now the next thing is, this child's about to be let out the door in 6 months, a year and a half. Are we just sending that child back out there without any prep for aftercare? Or did we try to contact a facility or an agency that might be able to grab this person when they come home and get them in some more structure? So we created our gang prevention program. So say somebody comes to the Capital Region in New York, they're coming home, well, they need aftercare, you contact our program, and I tell you what, when he comes home, he knows he can contact us. We'll have a job, a GED program, something there available where that person can take the next step. So I think more facilities and more agencies should look at aftercare and say, you know what, let's put a little more into this because we don't want a revolving door theory. I don't want kids at 12 years old get put on probation. All of a sudden, after 12 years old, the country turns to a PINS petition, person in need of supervision in our state. And after a PINS petition, they get put in an OCFS facility. Then after that, they turn 16, get put in a county jail. And they're used to that three squares and a cot, as we talk about. They're used to that jumpsuit and then Bob Barker slippers on, as we say. We don't want these kids institutionalized so where they take these steps and they end up in a state facility at 17 or 18 with a felony that they're prepped, they've done it, they know what they can do, they can hang, they're used to this type of living. No, we want to show these kids you made a mistake. We're not going to have a revolving door. We don't want this bed and you coming back here in 6 months because you made another mistake. We're going to surround you with the people. We're going to surround you with some aftercare. And then hopefully you can become an eagle instead of a pigeon, as I tell kids. We tell kids to fly solo. Stop hanging in groups like pigeons and flocking because that's when most of these kids are ending up with trouble because their friends are frying them. You know, we talk to kids every day, and when we tell them to spell that word friend and cut it in half, F-R-I is fry, E-N-D is end, and your friends will fry you in the end if you're not careful. So a lot of these kids need to make better choices, but when we have them in these facilities, let's just not sit on them and use it as job security or whatever we want to use it as and say, well, the bed's full and another number's here. No, let's talk to these kids. Let's give them somebody to talk to, consult and work so people from the outside can maybe find out what their problems are, and then we can prepare them and be there for them when they do step out so they don't have to worry about getting back on that bus and heading north again.
That concludes today's live talk. Thank you to Ron Cook Barrett, Capital Region New York Gang Prevention Coordinator, for joining us today. To learn more about youth gangs, be sure to read this week's articles on corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Megan Mandeville.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.